radio network all across the USA, 800-288-9227, and Ask the Law with retired senior trooper Monty Dial. If you've got a question about CSA 2010, hours of service, anything to do with law enforcement and rules when it comes to trucking, 800-288-9227. Gary McNamara with Eric Harley.
It's a service of Old Blue USA, and we just want to let you know all the information and answers are up to date as of today, Tuesday. August 2th. Man, we're already into August.
You said Tuesday?
Yeah, Monday, August 2th. here we are, and it's, you know what? It might as well be Tuesday, because it's this everything since I've been home has totally flown by. I had vacation, and I came back on Saturday, and it's like I just pulled into my driveway. Wow. I have been nonstop since I got home. Nonstop. It's just flying by. It is Tuesday. It is Monday. Told you. August 2nd, 2010. And we want to let you know, if you have a question anytime, we know that a lot of drivers think of a question maybe like right as the show is ending, we don't have time to get to you every month on Ask the Law. You can always go to askthelaw.org. Askthelaw.org. Click on that big red button that says email. Ask the Law. And we also want to let you know that comments made by anyone other than Trooper Dial on a Monday or a Tuesday, anytime on this program, are considered to be opinions only. All right, so 800-288-9227. We had a driver last hour, and we have some calls hanging on. Hold on just a second. We're going to get to our calls. But Pete called about his company that is dispatching him out, and then he's reaching the end of his 14 and then expected to go find a place to park for the night, and so that puts him over his 14. I asked you the question during the break, and this is something we have talked about for years on this program, but it's the 14-hour rule. The 14-hour rule, he could, if he didn't have to drive, you can work.
Yes.
Loading or unloading, as long as you don't ever drive that truck past the 14 hours. You can work, I guess, indefinitely, as long as you are not driving.
Correct.
And then you get a 10-hour break before you get behind the wheel.
Correct.
Okay. And so, I asked you the question. All right. So the purpose of the 14-hour rule is, of course, to keep drivers, your answer, to keep drivers from driving past that 14 hours
yes.
of on-duty time.
Yes.
All right. So this situation, if he weren't forced to drive past that 14 hours,
he would not be in violation.
He could work.
Correct. He could work.
As long as he weren't driving.
Correct. And took a 10-hour break before he started driving again.
Right. So there you have it. But, of course, in most cases, you're not going to be able to park on site. They want you off site. The FMCSA website, should he just go to fmcsa.dot.gov?
Yes.
All right.
And there's a link on there for filing a complaint.
Yeah.
Click on it, fill the paperwork, or fill the information out, or it gives you a telephone number. And like I said earlier, you will remain anonymous.
Yeah.
And go ahead and we encourage, law enforcement encourages complaints to be filed,
mm-hmm.
and they will respond by contacting the motor carrier.
Yeah. All right. You also, I would say this, that if you have not addressed this with your carrier, you probably need to do that. If
yes.
dispatch is doing this, this could be, and I don't know the scenario, but this could be a dispatcher that is just getting their math way out of whack and is not planning properly and trying to cover their own backside. In this scenario, try and handle it internally because there may be somebody within the company that would be very concerned about this and would change it. I don't know if that's the case or not, but that's a possibility.
Yes, definitely contact the someone within the organization,
mm-hmm.
Whether it be safety, whether it be owner, whatever,
yeah.
and let them know what's going on.
All right, 800-288-9227. Let's get back to you.
And we go to Gary in Utah. Gary, you're on the Midnight Radio Network. You're on Ask the Law. Welcome. Hi.
Let me get away from the motor here. I got a buddy I was talking to with his APU. Hey, I was involved in a deal here the other day where I had a roadside inspection and they were doing a training thing, and I had in my hand what I thought was my get out of jail tag or paper. I'd just been inspected 15 days prior to that in California.
Mm.
And these guys absolutely insisted that they were going to expect me as a training session for the state or the city they were working with for the state.
Okay.
And I got to the point where I thought, I got a knuckle under, I'm going to have a bigger problem than I had to begin with. What is the proper procedure in something like that where I've, you know, if I went back and reread everything, they're not supposed to bother me unless they can physically see something looking at the truck wrong, if I understand it right. Now, what's the procedure for that, you know, as far as, do they just roll over and take it or what?
Did they do a level one?
Yes.
And
they had 8 officers under my truck on creeper, but it was 4 hours before I got out of there, but it was all said and done.
And California did a level one?
Yes.
Facility. FMCSA, or I'm sorry, CVSA is the organization you need to contact. Their deal is unless they see an obvious defect when the driver pulls in, if you can show them that you have gone through a level one inspection, there were no violations noted on the previous inspection, they do not see one, they're not supposed to tie you up to do another one.
Okay, then how hard do I push this issue? If they're really insistent on the time, I got to do what they say right there.
Well,
right.
One of the things that I've always, ever since I've been doing a radio show, and even when I was working, I've got a saying, he who wears the gun makes the rules.
Yeah, I've heard it.
yeah.
And so it's a deal that, no, you don't push the issue there.
Yeah, because there's a time and place for that. I think it's pretty simple. Everybody understands that's not the time and place.
And
you can, there is a time and place to argue your case.
Yes, and I would definitely contact CVSA. They are the ones that are responsible for setting up the protocol. FMCSA is basically an organization that writes the rules. CVSA is the one that certifies all of the inspectors. They have to meet a certain criteria. FMCSA, like I say, just has a set of rules. But CVSA is the one that sets up what a level one is, what a level two, a level three, and all and so forth. I would definitely take and contact CVSA. Their website is CVSA, stands for Commercial Vehicle Safety Alliance.
I've got them on my website.
.org. Get a hold of them and explain what's going on.
And do like you did here with this phone call, Gary, and that is be level-headed and very direct with your complaint. Just the facts so that they will see that as to exactly how that happened. Okay, just in your claim, anytime you just kind of want to leave emotion out of it. If you give them the facts of the situation and tell them your concerns, then at that point they can make a clear
judgment. One thing that'll help, Gary, is were there any violations noted on the California inspection?
No.
There you go.
I had a brand sticker on the truck.
Yep.
But the problem is the sticker was in the last quarter, and we just changed quarters.
Yep.
But I got it on the tail end of the quarter.
But it was within the 90 days?
It was 15 days old.
It doesn't make any difference what they do is we have 4 ways that we take, and actually you have 4 different colors, and you have 3 different corners that they tear off. And if based upon the color and which corner is either missing or all the corners on there, that tells them when that inspection was done.
Yeah, cursor wedding look at and see how whether they're wasting their time or not. Hey, follow-up question on another gentleman about the warnings.
Yeah.
This is what my company is telling me, that if it's a state inspection and you're getting a warning to ask for the ticket, that way you can fight it in court. Or
no.
If you just get a warning, you're just SOL.
No.
Because either way, it's going to show up on CSA 2010.
Right. It doesn't make it. Well, the thing is, what Gary is getting at is a lot of them are saying, well, if I get a ticket, now that I can take and go to court and get the ticket dismissed.
So if you get it dismissed, it'll come off your CSA 2010, but that's not
true.
No,
because here again, you're looking at 2 different actions. You're looking at violations of regulations versus the state's right to have a citation issued. And well, FMCSA doesn't care whether or not a citation was or was not issued. They are looking at a violation.
Well, doesn't that take something away from the officer's discretion on site?
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily. Well, you know, they're seeing the whole situation. He deems it's a warning item rather than a citable item.
Right. And here again, FMCSA is looking for violations, not whether or not a driver was issued a citation, mm-hmm. or whether the driver was only issued a warning. They are looking for violations of the regulations, regardless of whether that trooper used his discretion or used his authority or his interpretation or his supervisor's directive and said, you will issue a citation for this or you will not issue a citation for that.
That's, this is the gentleman apologizing for stopping me, but his CO had told him to.
Yeah, but like I say, here again, FMCSA looks at violations irregardless of whether a citation was or was not issued.
All right, thank you. I'll get off.
All right, Gary, thank you so much. We do appreciate that. Some great questions from Gary. If you want to get in, 800-288-9227. Back with Trooper Dial in just a moment. It's Ask the Law
on the Midnight Radio Network. It's the Midnight Radio Network. Welcome. Good morning. It's Ask the Law. Gary McNamara, Eric Harley.
For Monday, since you guys insist on being all correct and stuff, for August 2 of the 2010 year, here we are. All the information is up to date as of today's program. Can change without notice. And we want to thank our friends at Old Blue USA for making this possible. For, gosh, how many years? Have we even been keeping track of how many years we've been
11
doing
years.
11 years on this radio program. I'm glad somebody's keeping track. We're going to talk more in just a few minutes about possible scenarios under CSA 2010. We always want to bring the callers to the table first at 800-288-9227. I want to remind you that comments made by anyone other than Trooper Dial are considered to be opinions only. AskTheLaw.org to submit your CND questions anytime. Just click on that big red button, and let's get back to you.
Let's go to Randy in Texas. Randy, you're on the Midnight Radio Network. You're on Ask the Law. Welcome. Hi.
Hi. I got a question. Is the company I drive for has been letting us drop a trailer and by showing this inter-trip inspection and then hooking up to another trailer at the same time with that inter-trip inspection. But I have said it was wrong, and I would like to know what Officer Dodds says about that.
What you need to do is... you do a post-trip inspection on the trailer that you're dropping off and a pre-trip on the trailer you're picking up.
That's what I have been, you know, telling them that you need to. And also, we do electronic logs, and I would like to know on a post-trip, pre-trip inspection type deal, how long should there be on electronic logs?
With the electronic log, the capabilities that it has is real time, and it will actually break it down into the minutes.
Right.
Whereas your log, the paper log, is broken down into 15 minutes. And I always tell everybody, if you're going to do a, pre- or post-trip inspection, you should be taking the same amount of time that a DOT inspector or a trooper takes to do a walk around at roadside.
Hmm. Okay, so, well, I mean, you know, if you're doing paper, just usually the 7-minute, you know, bills, because you're on 15 minutes, so you round it off to the next, or lower, you know, depending on the situation. So I was wondering if, like on a pre-trip, if you've done an inspection in 7 to 8 minutes, is that accurate time or
sure,
not?
Sure, sure. Because a pre-trip, the pre-trip, all it's required is that you satisfy yourself that that vehicle is in safe operating condition, and you review the last driver vehicle inspection report, your post-trip, that was done on the vehicle. Well, if you drove that truck and that trailer last night and you're starting your trip, I would say that it would not be unreasonable to show 4 or 5 minutes on a pre-trip.
Okay, well, that's good.
Because all you're going to do is walk around to make sure that sometime during the night, your partner next door decided he needed parts off of your vehicle, and all you're doing is making sure that all of your tires are aired up, all your lights are working, and you're good to go.
Okay, well, I appreciate it. That helps a lot, okay?
All righty. Thank you so much. We do appreciate that, Randy. Coming up in just a few minutes, I'll ask you more about CSA 2010 and the possible scenarios that might come up and some things that I think we've touched on here but bear repeating for those who have questions on CSA 2010 and how certain items are weighted under CSA 2010. So stand by for that. Drivers, if you want to get through, this is the time to do it. If you've got a question about hours of service, CSA 2010, and more, Trooper Dial is here. It's Ask the Law
on the Midnight Radio Network. It's a Midnight Radio Network, and Ask the Law. Gary McNamara with Eric Harley.
Retired senior trooper, Monty Dial. We have to mention that you're retired, because I think that's important. And the Texas Highway Patrol, Monty Dial is here and has been for 11 years now.
Yes.
Hosting Ask the Law. Trying to think of what we were doing back in 1999. Well, we were talking about hours of service.
Yes.
A lot like we are today.
Yes.
We weren't talking about CSA 20. Can you imagine back in 1999 someone said, well, in 2010, here's what you're going to be dealing with. But we want to thank Old Blue USA for making this possible. Just got off the phone with RJ, and we thank him and the entire organization. AskTheLaw.org is the website. You can go there, click on that big red button anytime. We want to let you know that all the answers to your questions are up to date as of today, Monday, August 2nd, 2010. Can change without notice, and all the comments made by anyone other than Trooper Dial are considered to be opinions only. All right, couple things here. We want to get back to the questions, so stand by. Drivers, this gives you a chance to get in right now at 800-288-9227. If you want to ask a question, we do have time for your question, 800-288-9227. Couple of things here, CSA 2010. All right, I was thinking in terms of wiring getting loose or something happens. You're traveling down the road, and your brake light goes out while in travel. It was working during the pre-trip, not working now. Is that just a case of bad luck? You think about the bugs being in the system now, that's not going to be the norm if that's actually what's happening. I know many drivers have probably claimed that that's happening when maybe it's not, but in the case that it actually happens where a light goes out, an indicator goes out or something in transit and you don't see it, you're not aware of it.
It's still going to be a violation.
Okay. That was my question.
Yes.
And fair enough. We'll just move on from there. Also, something you mentioned before, and this is, I think, that something you've done a lot of studying under CSA 2010, and what you have noticed is that these items that drivers would notice during a pre-trip inspection are the ones that carry a greater weight as opposed to items that are only likely to come up during a level one inspection. Like brake adjustment doesn't carry the weight that tires do. Tires carries a higher weight. It's like, what, 8 points?
Yes.
And brake adjustment is like four?
Four.
All right. And at first you were wondering, okay, why is that? But it comes down to what is most obvious to the driver.
Yes.
And would be a more apparent during that pre-trip.
Correct.
So that's what they're looking at.
Yes.
When weighting all of this stuff.
Yes.
All right. So that's that. Again, just trying to understand the methodology behind all of it.
Right.
Behind the design of CSA 2010. And also, because we had this caller last hour, and he was, you know, he had a lot of concerns, and many do, about CSA 2010, and well, this isn't, you know, this isn't going to be good for the driver. This isn't going to be bad. It's going to be bad, especially for owner operators who have their own authority. There are a lot of concerns here. Some drivers are saying, well, this is whether I'm ticketed or not, this is showing up, so I really don't have, you know, any recourse. But what you should know is that whether it's the carrier or the driver, under CSA 2010, you actually have greater opportunity to correct your mistakes.
Yes.
And improve your record, even as a carrier, before, because the carrier has ultimately could be shut down, while a driver can't have their license revoked. Under CSA 2010, the carrier can be have their door shut.
Right.
But even then, they have a greater opportunity to go back, correct these items, and essentially get on the right path.
Correct.
And pass more CSA 2010 or pass more inspections.
Correct.
And
what they're going to do is every 30 days, your profile, they call it safety data, safety management data,
mm-hmm.
is going to be updated. So if you get an inspection, say today.
Right.
And we're already in CSA 2010. Come September the 1st, that data becomes live data in your either the driver or the carrier. They
right,
can
right.
see it. Once the carrier obtains or attains a certain score, and usually it's going to be in the upper 90 percentile.
Hmm.
Ranking of other carriers the same size fleet you are.
Mm-hmm.
Intervention process starts. The same thing for the driver. If you're in peer group 1, peer group 2, peer group 3, once your score is up in that upper 90 percentile, intervention process starts. First thing they're going to do is they're going to send you a letter
mm-hmm.
saying, hey, we have found a problem.
Mm-hmm.
This is what the problem is. The driver and or the motor carrier, depending upon which one the letter is sent to, will sit down and will write a letter back to FMCSA and say, I will do this.
Right.
Now then, and I kind of use an analogy of a merry-go-round. You get put on this merry-go-round, it starts spinning. At the end of 30 days, if the driver gets thrown off, here comes an intervention letter. Driver gets back on the merry-go-round, it starts spinning. They look at it again at the end of 30 days. If you get thrown off again, here comes another intervention letter.
Mm-hmm.
The carrier, what they'll do is carrier gets on there, merry-go-round spins, carrier gets thrown off, here comes an intervention letter. Carrier gets back on the merry-go-round, it spins. If nothing has improved at the end of the next 30 days, gets thrown off. Now then, here comes another letter from FMCSA.
Right.
This time, they may be directing it at a particular driver,
mm-hmm.
or they may be addressing a particular violation. The carrier has to send a letter back in. The third intervention is they come out and will actually do a mini compliance review addressing what violation they have, whether it be maintenance, whether it be hours of service, whatever. The fourth time they come out, it's a full-blown compliance review, and you will either be fit, marginal, or unfit.
Mm.
And if you get the unfit rating, the door is locked at that point, and you can no longer continue to do business.
Okay, so for essentially, these interventions come at a quicker pace under CSA 2010.
Yes.
But as such, You're given more chances.
Correct.
All right.
But you can't reopen again?
No.
No. If you are unfit, you're as a carrier, you're done.
Right. Yes.
All right. 800-288-9227.
Let's talk to David on the Ohio Turnpike. David, you're on the Midnight Radio Network, and you're on Ask the Law with Trooper Dial. Welcome. Hi.
Hi. How are you tonight?
Good.
I have a question. I was over the road. I lost my job. I'm now currently with a local company. We have a 16-hour rule exemption. If you start and stop from the same location, Can there be a little more in depth on that about what criteria you need to meet a 16-hour exemption for
okay.
that one day in that one week?
First, okay. all right. I know where you're going to now.
Uh-huh.
All right. What if you are a what we call local delivery? You start and stop from the same location. You are filling a logbook out each day.
Yes.
Then once in any 6 days, you can use the 16-hour rule. And you can find this in 395.1. And I'm not exactly sure what the letter after the 395.1 is. But it may be O. Don't hold me to it. But
right.
get 395.1 and read it. So what you do is you go out and you come back. You go out and you come back on one day. They can extend your work day additional 2 hours. You still have to stay within the a maximum of 11 hours driving. But you can add 2 additional hours of working on there.
As long as you start and stop from the same origin.
Right, and you have to do that during the previous 5 days. So, like, if Monday through Friday you started and stopped from the same location, then the following Monday, then you would be eligible to use the 16-hour rule on a Monday.
Correct.
Or you can use the 16-hour rule after any 34-hour reset.
Once during each reset, correct?
Anytime there is a 34-hour reset.
Oh, okay.
So you let's say, for an example, that you make deliveries on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. You work your 14, and say that you're off Saturday and Sunday. But you always start and stop from the same location. You've had a 34-hour reset for Saturday and Sunday, so Monday you could do a 16-hour. Then you're off on Tuesday. If you can squeeze 34 hours into that, Wednesday you could do another 16-hour.
After every 34-hour restart. Okay.
Right. Or if you don't have a 34-hour reset in there, it's once in any 6 days.
Okay. Yeah, this was new to me, and I wanted to make sure I wasn't being lied to from a dispatcher.
Yeah. Yeah, because that never happened.
Oh, no, not in this lifetime.
But no, David, be sure, and get your reg book out and look up in 395.1 and 395.1, and it's got the 16-hour provision in there.
All right. Thank you, David. We do appreciate the call. As we go to a break, it's the Midnight Radio Network at
800-288-9227. It's the Midnight Radio Network and Ask the Law. Gary McNamara, Eric Harley.
And we want to thank Old Blue USA, RJ Taylor, and the folks over there. And for those who are on hold and we're not going to be able to get to your questions here on the air this morning, we just want to remind you to go to askthelaw.org, askthelaw.org. You click on that big red button that says Email Ask the Law, and remind you also that all the answers that you heard on today's program are up to date and can change without notice, and all the opinions or all the comments you heard other than those of Trooper Dials are considered to be opinions only. So thank you, Trooper Dial, once again. We want to remind folks that you and R.J. Taylor will be at the Great American Trucking Show in Dallas.
Yes, I don't know what booth number. I think we're on aisle 2400.
Okay. All right. They won't be able to miss you, but you guys will be walking drivers through inspections
yes.
and everything else. So.
Yes. Look for the big black and white Tahoe.
All right.
And we'll be close by.
Yeah. So make sure you do that. And again, askthelaw.org. Click on the big red button that says Email Ask the Law. And sir, we'll go over some next month. We'll go over some items that you guys cover there and much more. So thank you so much.
Yes.
We appreciate it. It's the Midnight Radio Network.
Hey.